sink my feet into the soil, soak my skin in ancient oil, bring my feelings to a boil, got to clarify. Hear my voice, the sound is pure, I'm just a lonely questioner, seeking clues to character, got to clarify, got to clarify. Here in the land of the midnight sun, of cinnamon and cardamom, where Viking battles are lost and won, ships are cast away, where church bells chime in the countryside and songs are sung at eventide, I might discover some trace of my DNA. The peaks and valleys, heaven knows, like fjords that soar and plunge below the waterline. Why I need the open fields, why I read the seventh seal, the light in August soon reveals the paradigm. The fingerprints and molecules, hereditary knowledge rules, the double helix never fools, the script is ready made. I'll shake these trees, I'll shake the stones, I'll shake these secrets from my bones, and when I'm done, I'll shake my soul, I'm not afraid, I am not afraid. The history of creation, the blueprints of the world, the secret of generations, this immortal coil unfurled.
Sure, being WFMT listeners, you already were able to figure out just by listening to that track that the DNA would belong to a Peabody and Emmy Award-winning television producer and journalist who was trained at Juilliard as an opera singer and who grew up in Chicago and went to our much maligned Chicago public schools, and whose mother sings contemporary, post-tonal, anti-tonal, and tonal music for much of her career, which went up until quite recently. You could tell all of that, right? That was Rondi Charleston, hometown gal made good on the East Coast, who has come back to share, and I'm not going to say your age, but because we are going to refer to the fact that we grew up together, but you were old, that I can allude to your age.
Absolutely.
That in your...
No secrets here.
In your sixth decade, which means... It's an age beginning with a five, not
a
six.
It's beginning with a five.
You
are, and I'm proud of it.
Doing a whole, it's a career you've worked in, but you're devoting yourself to a career that's just on top of all these other amazing things. Rondi, welcome back to Chicago, and thank you for the tour you're about to give us through Signs of Life, the new CD, half of which, at least, the tracks are not only performed by you, but written by you. Welcome home.
Well, thank you, Andrew. My goodness, what a wonderful intro. You've encapsulated my entire life in 30 seconds.
Well,
I'm
I
so
left
impressed.
Out wife and mother.
Oh, that's
what,
true.
That's important,
okay,
right?
That's the most important, actually. Absolutely, yeah. No, we are fellow Hyde Parkers, and Chicago is in my DNA, has been from the moment I was born down in Billings Hospital. And I have had an amazing... journey through life, have many twists and turns. As you said, after going to Juilliard, became a broadcast journalist for a few years, and now I'm back to my true love, which is jazz. And so happy to be able to have the chance to record some of this music, and so really feeling very just blessed to be able to write my own music at this point and have something to say, have enough life experience behind me so that I can actually have a point of view about things and bring that point of view into my work.
That's extremely important, that last part, what you said, particularly to go all the way to the other end of the spectrum, but one that has influence beyond that. And in a time of almost, I don't even know how to call it, but when the American Idol genre convinces people, even in classical music, that youth and jumping into something that you don't yet know and singing really loud or playing really fast is the purpose, when in fact it's almost the opposite. It's when we know things that we have something to say. In most cases, there obviously are people who are old souls, and at 17 they're writing songs that are Schubertian or whatever, at least in their own genres. But for most of us, we need life experience, and we need to know how we're doing something and why we're doing something.
Exactly. And it really has taken me a long time to come to this point. When I was in my 20s and a classical musician at Juilliard, I didn't have the depth of experience to put it all together. I didn't have the worldview yet that I have now. And so in that regard, being in our 50s is a wonderful thing.
Right.
I am enjoying being in my 50s more than ever. Yeah.
I don't think, though, that your years of preparation and practice technically have harmed you from being able to sing and sing well throughout the decades.
Oh, sure. Yes.
That's the trick, is if you're now in your 50s, go back and learn to build that voice from when you were a child, and then you can continue.
If only, it's like science fiction. If only I could go back and have that
right.
That technical prowess that I had in my 20s. With,
right.
Yeah, right.
but I mean, in all seriousness, I would imagine that having both come from an artist family and also having had that training, whether you're using particular pieces of that training, what you always have is the awareness of the instrument, right?
Exactly. As you mentioned, my mother is a wonderful and highly accomplished, renowned soprano, and she gave me my first voice lessons when I was 13 or 14 years old, right when my voice starts to mature at that age, my mother, Elsa Charleston. And she taught me very well from the get-go. I always understood my breath support. I always understood good healthy forward placement. And I have never had, knock on wood, any vocal troubles in my entire career, whether it was singing opera or singing jazz. I've never had the typical singer ailments, the nodes and abuse of the voice.
Knock on the formica table.
Exactly. Right.
DNA, you mean it literally as well as in this quite used way it's entered into English and American vocabulary. You actually base this song in part on your own curiosity and your own response to your literal DNA. The Charlestons were very Norwegian people, as I recall, particularly yes. Growing up in Hyde Park, where we basically, as Don Terry, the longtime Chicago journalist, put it once in a memoir, I grew up in a mixed neighborhood, meaning Black, Jewish, and Japanese. So it didn't leave a lot of space for Scandinavians.
No, we were the only kids in school on Yom Kippur. Right. Let's just put it that way. I begged my mother to have a Hanukkah bush. I mean,
right.
You know, I didn't realize that we were in the reverse situation until I got to New York. I thought the whole world was like this, and then mm-hmm. I figured out it was the flip. Anyway, back to DNA. My interest in this subject started during a trip to the homeland, to Scandinavia, with my mother a couple of years back. And one day we were having a picnic with our relatives who are still living, many, many, many of them, over in Ørsta.
This is on the west coast of Norway,
near
Bergen.
The west coast of Norway, right. Near Bergen. And I met them for the first time. I had never been to Norway before. I had never met my relatives before. And I was struck by the similarities, not just the physical characteristics, which were very, very plain to see, but the personality traits, character traits. Mm. And one of the things that I've been researching is the scientist James Watson and his work with the DNA strands. In fact, I'm in touch with him now out at the Cold Spring Harbor Laboratory in Long Island. His opening statement is that DNA is not just physical, but it really is character traits and personality traits. And this is not an imagined thing, that we have certain, you know, identifiable traits that you can, you know, trace back multiple generations, and that, you know, they are to some degree geographically
linked. Yeah.
For Norwegian and Scandinavian heritage, we have we're very introspective and very quiet mm-hmm. people, mm-hmm. really are. And my relatives that I met were just that way, very, very loyal in terms of friendship and devoted and kind, but quiet. And that's good in terms of, for me, as a writer, it's good mm-hmm. to be introspective and quiet. As a performer, I wish that I had some Italian Jewish Michigas to work with, because I've had a lot to overcome just getting up and standing on a stage and performing in front of people. Mm-hmm. There's a certain, you know, in our family, it's always been in a choral situation. You can sing in a choir. You can, you can be a soloist in a choir, but to step out, and I know my mother had some issues with this in her family, to step out and be a soloist takes a lot of chutzpah.
Right.
And it's borderline. It's dicey.
Right.
So that was one of the things that I wanted to explore in this song, is, you know, having these conflicts inside of us, which we all have, these mm-hmm. kinds of conflicts. Highs and lows and peaks and valleys and fjords and you know, the imagery when I went up my first fjord and I saw, well, there's a great metaphor for my disposition. We have
right.
also got highs and lows in
right.
Scandinavia. Very, you know, that's a whole
and
other
you
subject.
Also, I mean, I feel almost a cheat because you're Norwegian and you hadn't been there until relatively recently. And I've not only been to Norway with your mom, I've also been there 11 times. And I feel like it's not right that I should have taken
right?
your time there visiting Leif Ove Andsnes's Chamber Music Festival.
But at least you know what I'm talking
Absolutely.
About.
And the other thing that I think that's very much a part of that heritage is that in those fjords, you will see a farm that consists of a small building that looks almost as if it has been applied to the side of a mountain. And then you will see the few animals that belong to that building around there. And you can't figure out how do the people get to there or from there. But the point is, once they're there, nothing is going to pry them away. So there is that stick-to-itiveness.
Exactly. Yeah, the stick-to-itiveness is very much a part of our national gestalt. I know that I've gotten an enormous amount of my discipline from my family. I thank God for that. I had to practice piano every day after school. I had to practice. There was no negotiating.
No, I certainly know from, you know, being exactly the same age as your brother, Eric, who's a wonderful percussionist and singer and teacher of percussion in Manhattan. And we would be running around doing things. We were all in the Chicago Children's Choir and that kind of thing. And then we'd say, well, let's go do this. And Eric would say, I have to practice. And we'd say, oh, you don't have to practice. No, I have to. You mean your parents are going to make? No, I have to. And we both developed a mocking of him, but mostly a respect, seriously, because he really was not going to be budged on certain things, and that was the Charleston thing. And God bless it. I mean, as you said, it's something that I wished I'd had more of. But set up our next song, and then after that, let's talk about how the whole CD came together and who the other musicians are. But we're going to hear Signs of Life that you wrote.
Sure. Signs of Life is the title track of the CD. And, you know, every song on the CD has some relation to this theme of Signs of Life. This particular song was inspired by my old antique 1844 home that I have with my family up in Westport, Connecticut. When we first moved into this house, there was a dirt floor in the cellar, the original dirt floor in the cellar. And I walked down there and I thought, oh, this is great. I'm going to be doing laundry in clouds of dust. And I noticed out of the corner of my eye a little object that sort of buried in the dirt. And I went over and I dug it up, and it was a little baby spoon, a rusty baby spoon from God knows when, maybe the turn of the century, maybe the 1800s. And then I looked through some other spots and I found old newspaper clippings from World War I, and I found old horseshoes. I found all kinds of artifacts down in this cellar. And it made me think, you know, it's not so much the artifacts themselves, it's the stories of the people who are connected to the artifacts that are fascinating to me. And for example, I did a little research, and it turns out that the man who lived in this house in the 1870s was an inventor, and he invented a certain kind of telescope. And so I started to imagine this whole scenario of him working up in the attic, inventing these telescopes and playing with the glass, and during the time that Abraham Lincoln was president, and the Gettysburg Address was written, and slavery, and the, you know, I kept imagining maybe this house was a stop on the Underground Railroad for slaves, and there is actually some documentation that shows that could have happened.
Right.
So the gist, overall gist that I'm trying to get at here is that if we are aware and mindful of our surroundings and of the little everyday objects that are around us, if we would just slow down and stop rushing and pay attention to some of these details and the lives that went before us, we could learn something.
Stepped down the wooden stairway through my cellar door, and I breathe the musty air from 1844, the air that knows the secrets of the past. And as I tread the old dirt floor, I notice tiny clues, little hints of times gone by beneath debris, just waiting there
lies around us, signs of spirits past, the evidence of everyday living seen through an hourglass. A baby, I hear children's voices laughing. I smell supper in the kitchen up above. There's a horseshoe from a carriage, rusty hinges on a coal bin, scraps of 1918 New York Times proclaiming Allied forces win the war, all unexplored. People in this world will find of me. A calendar, a battery, a page of scribbled poetry, a cardboard box of finger paints my little daughter drew when she was two. Signs of life around us, subtle things that last, the evidence of everyday living seen through an hourglass.
Seeing Things Through the Hourglass, our guest, Rondi Charleston. And Rondi spells her name with an E in Charles. We'll just leave it at that. Rondi, R-O-N-D-I, Charleston, the title track of her Signs of Life on the Motema label?
Motema.
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 M-O-T-E-M-A.
An African word that means, I think it's Zulu, it means heart.
Oh, right. Okay. And there's a lovely heart logo that goes with the Motema. Tell us about this particular project, this CD, your colleagues and collaborators, in particular, gentleman Dave Stryker, with whom you wrote the music for some of these, and you also have one of his co-written songs, and he plays the guitar and is musical director.
Exactly.
And I've never heard of him.
Well, now everybody's going to know about him. He is one of the most beloved musicians within the jazz world. He's one of these people who is underappreciated outside of the jazz world, but everyone in the jazz world knows him. Pat Metheny calls him, just one of our great living guitarists. It's high praise coming from Pat. And Dave has a very creative, sort of endless flow of ideas, and it's been a real joy to collaborate with him on some of these songs. He has worked with Stanley Turrentine for many years, and Kevin Mahogany, and he's in demand as a sideman as well as a soloist. We also have an amazing group overall. We have Clarence Penn on drums, who Clarence has played quite a bit with Wynton Marsalis, and as have most of the people on my CD. Brandon McCune, our pianist, used to play for Betty Carter and Abby Lincoln.
There's definitely an Abby Lincoln, not I don't mean this in a negative way, but not quite Betty Carter, because Betty Carter sometimes was going way, way out, which was how to go in for her. But there's definitely a feel of that world of both singing and lyric and the musical context.
Right, exactly. Abby Lincoln is one of my heroes, and partially because of her devotion to the art of storytelling through music. And that's kind of what I aspire to do, is to really bring a narrative into the songs, so that, you know, so much of the music, the popular music that you hear today, is all about sort of getting stuck on an emotion and just describing this one emotion for 3 minutes or 4 minutes. And there's no story. There's no arc. There's no beginning, middle, and an end. I always think of my songs, and I learned this from listening to Abby on her recordings. You think of a song as you're composing it as having three acts, really. It's got an act one, an act two, where the plot is developed, and then it needs that third act as well. And people respond intuitively to storytelling. Everyone loves to hear a good story, you know? And I think that it's exciting to bring, you know, I use my own life experiences when I write. I bring my own stories to life. And people are really resonating with people.
Let me just mention that Dave Stryker is spelled Stryker, and we'll put information up about the recording and also about some of the guests on the recording on our website. You're listening to Critical Thinking. I'm your host and producer for this series, Andrew Patner, and you're listening to 98.7 WFMT in Chicago and or WFMT.com. We heard a harmonica on that track, and we're going to hear it again on the next thing we're going to listen to. Maybe you can tell us about Grégoire Marais.
Grégoire Marais is a protege of Toots Thielemans, the great harmonica player, the jazz harmonica player.
Who also has one of the great names of all time.
Toots. Yes.
Toots Thielemans.
Thielemans. And Grégoire has really rapidly become a superstar in the jazz world. He plays and sings backup vocals with Pat Metheny, and he's played for Sting and Elton John. He's gone beyond jazz. He's one of these players that can play everything and is very much in demand. And he plays on a few of the tracks on this album, and he tours with me as well. He adds this je ne sais quoi. He adds this wonderful atmosphere to everything. He gives a layer of meaning.
And he's going to add some of that now to The Wind Speaks.
Yes.
Do you want to say anything about that?
Well, this song was inspired by a hot air balloon ride over Napa Valley that I took with my husband a few years back. It was an early morning, very magical kind of an experience. And it in the middle of the ride, I just started to look down over this spectacular countryside and appreciating and valuing the beauty of our planet. Land,
breathing in its mystery. The rushing wind speaks through the apple trees. It dances over grapevines, kissing their leaves. It whispers through the wheat fields and the wilderness, winding through the rivers, rustling their reeds. And like a bird, I'm flying high above the ground. The wheels of planet Earth turn round without a sound. And then the sun pours down like honey from the sky, like some remote clairvoyant vision from a prophet's eyes, a prophet's eyes.
The Wind Speaks, Rondi Charleston and Dave Stryker song, performed by Rondi Charleston, and you heard Gregoire Marais harmonica on that track as well. All of this coming from Rondi Charleston's CD, Signs of Life. Rondi, this week you were in Chicago, the week that we're talking at least, which is towards the end of April 2013. You performed at the main stage up in Rogers Park, which is a gem of a spot.
Mm-hmm.
Yes?
Beautiful theater. I love singing there. It's our second time back, and it's intimate. It's not too big. It's not too small. Everybody can see. Everybody can hear. It's got great sound. And it's. I wish there were more like it.
We do, too, but we're glad that at least that one is there. Mm-hmm. And I hear this from artists in all genres from all around the world, what a wonderful spot it is to play in at Morse and Wayne in Rogers Park in Chicago. You also taped with our colleagues on the other side of the building at Chicago Tonight with Phil Ponce, and that's going to be appearing soon. And you, in the best Charleston fashion, you also were at DePaul. You gave a masterclass. Tell us about that. I mean, who are the students? What are their expectations? And what happens when somebody who's both been there and tried out other things comes and talks to them?
Well, that's a good question. I have, because of my background as a classical musician who has transitioned to jazz, the subject matter that we tackled this morning was the Great American Songbook. And I asked the kids to each bring in something that they were passionate about by not just the Gershwins, but Jerome Kern or Johnny Mercer or Harold Arlen. And I asked them to find a way to personalize this music. A lot of times what happens with younger singers is that they think that they have to conform to a certain kind of opera sound, and they have to sing like a classical musician, like a classical singer. And I encourage them to just have a conversation mm-hmm. through the music. I have them sit down, do an exercise where we sit down and pretend like you're having a cup of coffee with a friend, and you just tell them what's in the song. You know, it's not the pale moon that excites me, that thrills and delights me. Oh, no. It's just the nearness of you. And all of a sudden, things start to happen, and right. spontaneity kicks in, and instincts kick in, and they're off and running. And we had several cases this morning where we had students just make leaps and bounds progress.
Wow.
And it was very
wow.
exciting for everyone.
I mean, that is such the essence of any leader singing or chanson singing or song singing or cabaret singing, right?
Exactly, exactly. And I said that to them. I told them, you can sing Schubert like this, you can sing Fauré like this, you can sing Mozart like this.
And if you're also fortunate to have a voice and an instrument, you can do that too, but you can't do it without that communication.
Right. Right. And you have to pick and choose your spots. You need to find the spots where indeed if there is some beautiful sustained high note, sure, go for it. But in the recitative building up to those spots, or in the aria building up to those spots, make it conversational. Make it, you know, engage us. Engage the audience. Don't just show off your beautiful voice.
Right.
Because to me that's not artistry.
And another thing you have to do, and that I know you talked about them with, and that we're going to hear for certain, even in greater relief in the next couple of selections here, you also have to know what the words are, and you have to pronounce them so that people listening can hear them and understand them.
Absolutely. Lyrics, for me, you know, as a daughter of an English teacher, language is so important to me, and I feel as if it's neglected in so many of our singers today. They put the music first, or in the case of popular music, the lyrics literally don't make sense half the time. So my emphasis is always on the words.
I want to say about your dad, since we've mentioned about so much about your mom up until now, and you mentioned, of course, being a professor, being an English teacher, but talk about somebody who has found a way to add careers over time. Rolf Charleston always wanted to be a radio announcer. He wanted to be a radio announcer for WFMT. And the poor man, I say this only because he's used these same words to me, tried out several times and took the infamous WFMT announcer's test and was sort of told, you have a great voice. And good luck in whatever else it is that you do. But he now is a radio announcer in Philadelphia.
Exactly. He has fulfilled his dream, finally. In fact, just to bring this conversation full circle, when he auditioned for, at the ripe old age of 70, I believe, for the spot, speaking of never having, you know, it's never too late to,
right.
to be who you might have been,
right.
the George Eliot quote,
right.
he came to me and he said, Rondi, I have an audition for a local radio station here, the public radio affiliate, and would you coach me? And I said, absolutely, absolutely. He said, you know I didn't quite get it at WFMT many, many years ago, and I want to improve. This is the Charleston. Once you lock on, you don't let go.
That's right. He's in that little red farmhouse.
He's in that little red farmhouse. He ain't moving. He ain't budging. So he said, I want to figure out what I did wrong so that I can improve and maybe have a shot. So I had him do the cup of coffee exercise. I said, sit down and talk to me like you're having a chat with an old friend. And don't announce, in quotes.
Can we hire you as a consultant here?
Sure. So it worked anyway. The technique worked. I mean, you know, we rehearsed and we went over it, and I said, no, I'm not quite believing it. Sounds like you're performing. Don't perform. Drop the pretense. Just be. And all of a sudden, he got the job, and he's had it now for 15 years.
That's fantastic. Yeah. And also, though, a reminder of, as you said, the DNA that's there for you is music, it's words, it's artistry, it's bringing them together, and all of it is hackneyed as it may sound, but it's rarely happens in reality. That's communication. So I don't want to say anything about the next song. We're going to play it, and then we're going to talk about it.
I'm reflecting back on my life. It's like a dream. Things are not quite what they seem. There's always something missing, something unseen. But dimly remember, I think of paths I might have taken, lives I'd have changed, some living souls rearranged, and I'm amazed how tender feelings can be. Looking back, we just peek through the crack between what's real and false. In this eternal waltz, meanwhile we just keep dancing. Now, at the end of my reflection, I'd have to say I would live life the same way. But that's the way that life goes. Thank God I'm a woman who knows. Looking back, we just peek through the crack between what's real and false. In this eternal waltz, meanwhile we just keep on. At the end of my reflection, I'd have to say I would live life the same way. But that's the way that life goes. thank God I'm a woman who knows.
There's so much that comes together there. It's the Thelonious Monk tune, and then the great John Hendricks, who for himself and for Lambert Hendricks and Ross and for posterity created a kind of specialty of putting words to jazz and other tunes and making whole new songs out of them. Reflections, he called this, well, it's the same title, I guess, in both cases, but also then Rondi Charleston coming in and taking this song and very much making it her own, and A Woman Who Knows in the lyrics at the end, and giving us the traditional jazz combo, a trio in the background. It also gives us the chance to mention that the wonderful pianist on this recording is Mr. Brandon McCune, M-C-C-U-N-E. Bass is Ed Howard, and we mentioned Clarence Penn on drums before. That must be nice, too, Rondi, to sing with that, the traditional club setting of a trio.
I love the intimacy of playing with a trio. There is, you know, sometimes when you have limitations, it allows you to expand even more than you thought you could. With a trio, you know, there are only so many possibilities for solos and combinations, and it forces you to each of the instrumentalists to become more creative. And the more freedom, you know, Duke Ellington once said, I just love this quote, he said, music, jazz music is like, it's like freedom of speech for music. That's what jazz is like, freedom of speech mm-hmm. for music. Mm-hmm. The more freedom that you have, especially in a combo like that, in a small combo, it's just very exciting stuff. It's very exciting.
I wish I could play every track, and I wish I could play now for you Babe's Blues, which is another John Hendricks, in this case with music of Randy Weston. But I also want to give you all a sense of Rondi with another language and talk about a world where words and music independently came together. The great Brazilian performer and composer Antonio Carlos Jobim, who with various lyricists, in this case, this was Vinicius de Moraes, and I'm sure that's not how it's pronounced in Brazilian Portuguese. Do you know how it's
Moraes,
pronounced?
Moraes, I think.
Moraes, that would make sense. This is their combination. Maybe you can both introduce and pronounce. I know saudade is saudade. But
right. Chega de saudade. Saudade means longing.
It's a kind of nostalgia, longing, homesickness.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's a word that has almost no real exact English equivalent, but it's that general feeling of longing. And chega de saudade really means enough of this yearning and longing. I want to go home is the gist of the song. And the English translation, no more blues, I'm going back home. No more blues, I promise no more to roam. It's for me coming back home to Chicago and coming back to music, everything is coming full circle. No more to roam. Home.
I've traveled round the world in search of happiness, but all the happiness I found was in my hometown. Dentro dos meus braços, os abraços ao dizer meus abraços apertados e colados, abraços pra acabar com esse negócio de você viver sem
Chega de Saudade, a song of homesickness and memory, but with a wonderful light side of it as well. And there you got to hear Rondi singing in Portuguese and English, a de Moraes Jobim collaboration there, or I can't remember if that was a living collaboration or an after-the-fact one. Rondi Charleston has been talking with us about her wonderful disc that we've sampled a little over half of, and it is about half of made up of originals and half of works that become original because they are interpreted and they're presented by Rondi and her colleagues on the disc Signs of Life, Motema, MOTEMA.com, or Rondi Charleston with an E in Charles. RondiCharleston.com are where you can find more about this and more of these things. And again, I just want to go back to the beginning of our conversation today to remind you that this really is an autobiographical and illuminating project because Rondi has been a close colleague and fellow Peabody and Emmy Award winner with Diane Sawyer on ABC News. Was it Nightline that you started with? Or
it was a show called Primetime Live.
Primetime Live, okay. And you've been an investigator. You've been an opera singer. You went to Juilliard, both undergrad and master's degree. And I would guess Bret Hart and Kenwood High School, right?
Kenwood okay. And Metro High School.
And Metro, she was a hippie, so she was also at Metro. Mm-hmm. The school without walls. And she now makes her home in Westport, Connecticut and in Manhattan. And fortunately, she's come back to appear at the main stage and elsewhere. And we all hope and think you'll agree that with this disc, you'll be hearing much more of Rondi. And certainly you'll be hearing her again here and on WTTW Channel 11. We don't have time to tell you too much more about a bonus track. But if you have a chance to see this extraordinary documentary, No Place on Earth, about a group of Ukrainian Jews who hid in caves for a year and a half to 2 years and escaped murder in the Holocaust that way. Fred Hirsch, the great composer, jazz pianist, and Rondi have a song written for and performed in that called The Cave Knows, and we'll have to talk about that the next time. Rondi, it's so great to have you home in Chicago, to hear what you've been doing, to hear how you've pulled many lives and careers together into this new career in your 50s, or this not new career, but enhanced career in your 50s. And Thank you so much for sharing your music.
Oh, thank you so much for having me on, Andrew. It was really a pleasure.
In addition to Rondi Charleston, we'd like to thank her wonderful mom, soprano Elsa Charleston, who spells her name correctly, C-H-A-R-L-S-T-O-N, without an E, Ronna Hoffman, and, of course, Matt DeStefano for recording the program, putting it together, and making it sound great. I'd like to thank our funders, Alpha Wood Foundation, Dick and Susie Kiphart, and other friends of this program. Let us know what you thought about this or any of our other programs. You can drop us a line at Rentap, it's Patner spelled backwards, R-E-N-T-A-P, at AOL.com. You can comment online or use the Chime In feature at WFMT.com. And that's also where you can go, WFMT.com/critical thinking, to experience this program or any other on the always free Critical Thinking podcast. I'm Andrew Patner. We'll see you next week.